It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferris. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, the newly created Wisconsin Ethics Commission has announced its leadership. Former Attorney General Peg Lautenschlager will be the new chair, and she's going to join us to talk about her new role there.
First, concentrated animal feeding operations, better known as CAFOs, are a polarizing topic for many Wisconsinites, frequently pitting environmentalists against farming operations and state agencies.
After past debates surrounding CAFOs in Wisconsin, DNR Secretary Kathy Stepp has said the agency does not have the authority to regulate the large-scale operations.
But a new decision from a Dane County judge effectively overturns the legal argument against state regulation, saying that the state can indeed regulate these farms.
The decision highlights the ongoing issue of how much power state agencies should have to regulate operations like CAFOs, also things like high-capacity wells.
Danielle Kading joins us now. She's a reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News based in Superior, and she's been covering the ongoing CAFO debate in northern Wisconsin. Danny, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Veronica. How you doing?
Good, thanks. Well, get us up to speed a bit. What happened with this most recent decision?
Well, Dane County Judge John Markson ruled that the state can set limits on these large dairy operations to protect water from pollution. This contradicts a recent opinion by Attorney General Brad Schimmel that says that the state DNR can't go beyond what's set out in state law. Or in essence, can't consider the cumulative impact of high-capacity wells on surrounding waterways.
And has that been the working method going forward since that remark from Schimmel that the DNR could not regulate?
Well, the Attorney General's opinion definitely holds weight. I mean, it typically holds a lot of sway, and so many courts definitely consider that highly when they are deciding how they should move forward in their own rulings. It doesn't mean that they have to side with the Attorney General. It's just that typically, the state agency, the DNR, has followed that ruling, and we've seen that recently last week when they came out and said that they are going to be changing how they address high-capacity wells, given this Act 21, which says that unless it's explicitly laid out in state law or rule, that the DNR cannot consider the cumulative or the impact of all these wells together on these waterways.
Right. And now, a week later, you have this ruling from Judge Markson saying, in effect, that's not true, that the DNR does have the authority to do this. So what do you expect to happen in terms of the impact this could have?
Well, confusion is the immediate impact, right? I mean, and we're seeing a lot of debate over what, if anything, should be done to protect water quality in light of a growing number of concentrated animal feeding operations in the state. And so there's disagreement at all levels of the court system about how that should be carried out and what laws may have bearing on that.
And in the meantime, I imagine this is perhaps grounds for an appeal and that we could be looking at further legal action.
Yeah, the farm does have the option to appeal. I'm not sure if they will be pursuing that method. They have said that they essentially are caught in the middle of a regulatory and court dispute over something that they feel that the agency should have been doing in the first place, which is taking this Act 21 law into account in how they go forward in evaluating high-capacity well permits, and that they should just do it on a case-by-case basis and that it shouldn't be all lumped together. There are a handful of cases that the DNR has received or a handful of applications for review since they have changed how they are addressing this in light of the Attorney General's opinion. So this is going to lead to some operations considering, if they can reapply for high-capacity well permits now that there's this change.
We're talking with Danielle Kading right now, reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News based in Superior. And she's with us now to talk about a recent ruling that could affect how much power the DNR has to regulate operations like CAFOs in Wisconsin. And Danny, Bayfield County has been having a debate about a hog farm and a city ordinance there, or county ordinance, I should say. Can you give us an update about where that stands with the CAFO there?
Yeah, as far as I know, the DNR has rejected their county ordinance for more stringent standards, local standards in the South Fish Creek watershed. They put those in place because they were concerned about a potential hog operation, which would place a farm of 26,000 hogs in that watershed. And so they developed these standards in order to protect that watershed, which has already seen high levels of phosphorus. The DNR shot that down and said, well, you know, there already is high levels of phosphorus in that watershed, and this ordinance does nothing to address the existing water quality concerns. And so they're working together right now, the county and state, to see what may be done possibly to change that ordinance or develop a new one. And the county itself is appealing that decision. I think a lot of concern surrounds concentrated animal feeding operations in the state right now, especially in light of a state audit last month that revealed that more than 94% of the time in the last decade, the state has not been following its own rules or policies on enforcement against polluters, including concentrated animal feeding operations.
Has the DNR had any response to that audit?
Yes, they have, and they said that many of the things that were cited in this state audit by the Legislative Audit Bureau, that they've been addressing that, and that in that period, that 10-year period between 2005 and 2015, that they actually were able to consider 24% or only 24% of city or industrial pollution permit applications were backlogged, and that they've been able to decrease that from 35% prior to that time period. So they say that they're trying to address it. Critics say that, you know, the amount of turnover in the DNR and the change and cuts to the science is a concern, and that even if you allow or even if something slipped through the cracks, even if it's a small amount, that's cause for concern.
And Danny, as this all plays out and the county works with the state on this ordinance, perhaps a rewrite, perhaps a legal challenge, what is your sense of how the county of Bayfield and the people who live in that area feel about all this?
Well, I think that it's a divisive issue. I mean, the most vocal part of that debate is anti-CAFO. They don't want to see the hog farm locate in that watershed. And then you have a less vocal portion of the community that wants to protect the heritage of farming and allow people to grow and thrive in a way that matches the region's values. You know, and for some, the issue is just being able to keep up with the cost of production and equipment and make a good living. And for some, they want to grow to be able to do that. Others are looking at options with sustainable agriculture. So it's not an easy answer. You know, you can't just say, well, don't allow large farms. It's just something that really divides the community, and there has to be a lot of discussion about what it is the values are in that area and how people want to move forward to allow farming while also protecting the water quality in the area.
And this lawsuit that we began with from Judge Markson, or this decision about the regulatory power of the DNR, do you expect that to have bearing on all this in Bayfield County?
Well, you know, I don't know what bearing that may have in Bayfield County. I mean, right now, the Iowa-based producer, Reichsview Farms, who wants to build a farm, hasn't done anything in months to move forward with its application. I think right now the biggest thing that's going to affect Bayfield County and the possibility of that hog farm is whether or not they're going to actually move forward with that plan. And right now, there has been no action on it, and people are wondering why. I think there is some concern that if that were built, then if they did choose to put in high-capacity wells as part of their operation, it definitely would have bearing.
Danny, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks, Veronica.
That was Danielle Kading, reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News based in Superior. And she joined us there to talk about a recent ruling that could affect how much power the DNR has to regulate operations like CAFOs in Wisconsin.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, the latest Marquette Law School poll showed a majority of Wisconsinites want marijuana to be legalized and regulated like alcohol. We'll talk to an advocate about the results and how legalized marijuana is playing out in other states.
First, in the fall of 2015, the state Senate voted to dissolve the Government Accountability Board and create two new agencies to serve in the same role as the GAB. The Elections Commission and the Ethics Commission, both of which will be made up of an equal number of Democrats and Republicans.
For the last few months, members of each party in the state legislature have appointed various people to each of the commissions, both Republican and Democrat. The leadership of each of the agencies is still coming together.
Last week, it was announced that Democratic former Attorney General Peg Lautenschlager would chair the new Ethics Commission. She joins us now to talk about the work she'll be doing there. Peg, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob. It's a pleasure.
Well, this thing is just getting underway. I understand you drew straws or something like that to decide which party got to pick the leader or got to have the leader?
That's correct. And indeed, we had two little pieces of paper and a hat, one with an R and one with a D, and the D came out. So
what goals do you have for this new board? You've got a lot of responsibilities here, potentially. What is your vision for it?
Right. Well, the commission essentially has three general areas in which it makes decisions or has enforcement authority. One is the area of lobbying, where we collect information on all of the lobbyists in the state, who is and isn't lobbying, whether or not they may lobby, that sort of thing. Second area is in state ethics and various matters that come before the commission involving potential ethics violations, ethics enforcement stuff. And the third area is campaign finance reports, something which historically has been on the election side of the various agencies and their various iterations. But the finance reports themselves are headed to the Ethics Commission now. I think probably our goals are twofold. I think for some of us on the commission who did not like the way in which the GAB was resolved, I think it's for us to try to make certain that citizens in the state of Wisconsin trust this Ethics Commission as being an appropriate enforcement agency for the things that come under our charge. Secondly, I think that all of us on the commission, Democrats and Republicans alike, have a strong desire to try to reach consensus and make decisions that will be in the best interests of clean and open government and in the best interests of the people of the state, and perhaps sometimes have to rise above partisan differences.
And that's the part that has a lot of people worried. When the Government Accountability Board went away, they used to have a group of retired judges doing this kind of thing. Now people are saying, okay, you've got three Democrats, three Republicans. The Democrats can block any complaints against Democrats. Republicans can block complaints against Republicans. It's a toothless board where nothing's going to get done. Do you think, having met with your colleagues there, that's not true?
Well, in a couple of meetings we've had, I've noticed two things. Number one is there is this real, I think all of us share a real high desire to show that this commission can work. And because of that, I think that we sometimes get past the sort of partisan bickering that occurs in other areas of government to try to rise to the occasion and reach consensus. Secondly, I think that what surprised me in the first couple of meetings we've had is that oftentimes our disagreements, where we have, you know, some members on one side of an issue, some members on the other, don't necessarily follow party lines. And so I think sometimes they go more toward, you know, how we view the world or what we think is important or the priority or the function of the commission. And then the third thing, of course, is simply that I think we all realize that you cannot have government come to a standstill. And it's kind of on us to make certain that this thing works. And so I think if you'd listen to us in open session as well as closed session, is that we have a real desire to reach consensus, to talk things through, to find ways in which we can reach common ground. We have been trying to make all of our decisions 6-0, I know that won't always be the case, but just so that people realize that we're, you know, when it comes to something that's put out by the commission, that we're all on the same page.
A lot of people hear things like rising above partisan differences, finding common ground, and maybe think of it as something that you might see at a museum. Do you think, actually, if you could pull this off and do this at the Ethics Commission, this could be an example for other institutions here in the state?
Well, you know, maybe, I don't know. I don't know that whether or not that's the case. I can tell you that, you know, other than Katie McCallum, Governor McCallum's daughter-in-law, those of us who are on the commission are kind of long in the teeth, and and in fact, we've had those conversations. I served, as you know, in the state legislature from 88 to 92. Mac Davis, who's on the commission, was about that time. Bob Kinney, a judge in Outagamie County, I think received an appointment to the court by Governor Lucy, I believe. So I think we have plenty of folks. Oh, and Pat Strakota from the West Bend area was in the legislature 10 years, I believe, in the mid-90s to early 2000s. So I think it's fair to say that at least a number of us have recollections of government being a little bit less divisive, pursuing common ground and not just always trying to play gotcha games or we're on one side, you're on the other game. So hopefully, you know, those years of experience that we collectively have had in local state government will afford us the opportunity to look at things through a slightly different lens.
Well, looking back a bit, staying with that longer-term perspective, Wisconsin used to have sort of a squeaky clean ethics reputation then, I think. Go back to the 90s, we had that caucus scandal that got a lot of people in trouble. Talk about the importance of good, transparent ethics enforcement to have good government.
Well, I think it sets a tone for all of the state, and it also sets a tone for what the citizens think of their state government. And because of that, it's fundamentally important. The reality is whether or not you are a big government person or a small government person or somebody in between or off on a different planet, the reality is that I think we all know that there are certain state services which we need to function, to be well-functioning in order to move forward as a state. And my sense is that, you know, if you're a company looking to move into the state, if you're a student looking to attend one of our universities, if you're somebody who wants to retire in some place with a good winter, whatever it happens to be, I think being a state with a reputation for clean government is a positive. And I think we're all aware of that, and I think because of it, it's something for which we put a high price.
Talking to Democratic former Attorney General of Wisconsin, Peg Lautenschlager, chair of the state's new Ethics Commission, one of the two agencies that is replacing the old Government Accountability Board. Peg, a lot of the reporting on this looks at a run-in you had with the predecessor to the GAB and that ethics agency when you were pulled over, cited for driving under the influence. Can you talk about that and how it affects your view of ethics now?
Sure, I absolutely can. And actually, believe it or not, it was before GAB that I had this so-called run, and it was when the Ethics Board still existed 12 years ago. And I did have what was deemed an unintentional ethical violation by using the state car inconsistently with the demands of my office. You know, in my defense, if anybody cares, I was using my car consistent with every other employee in the Department of Justice who could use the car in the fashion I did, but I learned after the fact that I was not able to use the car in that fashion. That being said, I think it does give me a little different perspective. I think for those of us who have spent most of our lifetime doing prosecutorial work, it's sometimes good to see or know someone who's been on the other side of the counsel table. And, you know, it's something in my past that never, hopefully, ever happened again. But it's something that is part of me and part of what I bring to the Ethics Board, along with, you know, my experiences as a county prosecutor and as a state legislator and as a federal prosecutor and as attorney general and as attorney in private practice. So It is part of who I am, and I understand there's some people who are upset with my appointment because of that, and that's their prerogative.
Now, Peg, you're coming in with this new board, news agency commission at a challenging time. This is a big election year, and campaign finance is finance reporting is one of your jurisdictions. And then once that's done, I think we've got a new state budget around the corner. People watching for lobbying and ethical complaints then. What do you see as some of the challenges ahead of the commission?
I think the biggest challenge for the commission is that since it has been operating within the Government Accountability Board, where there were a number of people performing election-type functions and others performing ethics-type functions, there was always that ability to move resources in a way that whichever side of the House needed something, it could be attained. Now with the agency divided into the two commissions, you're going to have less flexibility when it comes to staffing levels and the ebb and flow of the workload. So that's one big challenge. Another big challenge, of course, is looking at all of the old law under the Ethics Board, under the GAB, and frankly some of the stuff that was old law under the old Elections Commission, and determining how that syncs with statutory changes that have taken place along with the formation of these two commissions is something that's significant. And, you know, how we present that to the public, whether or not those old opinions and orders are something which will still have effect partially, completely, or not at all, all of those kinds of issues are kind of before us now. So that coupled with, as you mentioned, the election cycle coming up and coupled with the state budget coming up after that, I think we'll keep the staff at the Ethics Commission very, very busy and probably create a little more work than usual for the Ethics Commission itself.
Briefly, as we wrap up, what do you think of the transition, the end of the Government Accountability Board and now this Ethics Commission along with the other commission, the Elections Commission? Do you think it could be a net positive for the state, or do you regret the change?
I personally regret the change. Clearly, people on the commission feel one way or the other. I think, though, all of us have a focus not on worrying about whether or not that change should be made, but rather what we do going forward. You know, the dissolution of the Government Accountability Board wasn't in the hands of anybody on our current commission. We may all have had opinions as to what should or shouldn't have been done, but, you know, our challenge is to be forward-looking and hope that we can create a system and put a system in place that affords us to fulfill the mission that has been placed on us by the legislature, and number two, gives citizens throughout the state confidence in the state government and the enforcement of its ethics laws.
Peg, thanks a lot for joining us today.
A pleasure to talk to you, Rob.
That's Peg Lautenschlager, former Attorney General of Wisconsin. She was recently selected as chair of the newly created Wisconsin Ethics Commission.
Coming up after the news, we'll talk to an advocate for legalized marijuana about the latest Marquette Law School poll results, which show a majority of Wisconsinites want legalized marijuana. I'm Veronica Ricker.
And I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, we'll get the latest news from the Republican National Convention. WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson joins us from Cleveland to talk about day two of the convention.
First, the Marquette Law School poll released last week showed a majority of Wisconsinites would support fully legalized marijuana regulated like alcohol. The poll asked registered voters, when it comes to marijuana, some people think that the drug should be fully legalized and regulated like alcohol. Do you agree or disagree with that view? 59% of respondents said they agree, and 39% said disagree.
Poll director Charles Franklin said the latest poll's results were much different from when a similar question was asked 2 years ago. In September 2014, the poll asked voters, do you think the use of marijuana should be made legal or not? At that time, 46% of respondents said it should be legal, and 51% said it should not be.
What do you think about legalizing marijuana in Wisconsin? What kind of restrictions or regulations would you support for legalized marijuana if that happened? How would you like to see this handled in the the legislature. What about on the national level? Call in now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Jay Seltofner joins us now. He's the treasurer and co-founder of Northern Wisconsin Normal, which stands for National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Jay, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Jay, what do you make of those new poll results showing that now a majority of Wisconsinites support legalized marijuana?
No, I think it's a positive step, shows the times are changing, and definitely gives the patients and providers in the medical market hope that we will at least see a medical marijuana law in Wisconsin shortly.
Currently, where are we with marijuana laws in Wisconsin?
It's basically illegal.
And including, as you said, medical marijuana.
Yep, medical marijuana, basically possession of any amount, cultivation of any sort, in any sort of sale, could result in a felony in Wisconsin under current law.
So as we said at the beginning there, the poll question was worded differently this year and 2 years ago, slightly different phrasing there, but still you have a big gain of people there who want to see marijuana legalized and regulated in a way that alcohol is regulated. What do you make of that shift? Do you think something has changed in the way the public views marijuana?
Very much so. I think you hit it right on the head. The wording is key there also. Most people can keep themselves familiar with the way the horrors of prohibition of alcohol, you know, work. There's plenty of documentaries and facts on that. So just comparing it to alcohol and a regulated model, I think you're going to see more people in favor of that. Again, programs like yourself and additional mainstream media coverage of other states that have both medical and legalized markets are going to help educate the general public. I'm sure that helps shift the tides when they see that the sky did not fall in the states that have medical markets or recreational markets. And as you get more reports coming in, the tax revenue is obviously attractive for most taxpayers. And then you probably have a situation where people can now vacation and travel to states where they can try it legally, where they may not have been able to before.
Well, as you're saying there, we have some states there where we can see how this is working out, sort of test cases, Washington and Oregon, the state of Oregon, and Colorado. As you look at those states, are you seeing any lessons or red flags going on?
We obviously like to focus on the positive. We can focus on the negative. The tax revenue and job creation from those particular changes in law are great. Most laws remove some sort of penalty or remove the penalty for some sort of personal possession. The amounts vary, but having that penalty removed is creating less stress on police. Well, I shouldn't say really less stress on enforcement in general, which would include police, attorneys, jails, prohibition, the whole gamut there. But we're also seeing reduced minor usage in those states. The statistics that are being reported are showing that minors are actually more less likely to use. And then because we are in a opiate crisis throughout the nation, states with medical laws, and then the whether we deem them recreational, adult use, legalization, but those states are seeing also a reduced opiate deaths and dependence. So most of the information is positive.
We're talking with Jay Seltofner right now from Northern Wisconsin Normal about Marquette Law School poll results on marijuana. And the latest poll results showed a majority of Wisconsinites now want marijuana to be legalized and to be regulated like alcohol. And Jay, the group CALM, it's Citizens Against Legalizing Marijuana, say that they point out marijuana continues to be identified by Congress and the DEA as a Schedule I drug, which means it has a high potential for abuse. They also say that there are no proven medical benefits. What do you say to that?
Well, we have, obviously anecdotal evidence. And then as far as trials and, you know, double-blind studies, there are more studies on cannabis or marijuana than there are traditional drugs that are available on the market. So it is a scheduling problem. I will admit that. The rescheduling or descheduling of cannabis would do great wonders for both medical and recreational states. And in fact, over the past decade or so, and recently the last two congressional sessions, that issue has been addressed, and we are actually waiting on another outcome from the DEA in Congress on whether they will reschedule it. They had given us a timeline of midsummer or July 1st of this year, but they haven't given us an answer yet. The last reports I read said that they weren't going to hold themselves to an artificial timeline. So that is something that's currently being reviewed and is avidly debated.
And Calm further goes on to say that they believe the increased availability of marijuana in communities would be detrimental to youth, to public health, and to the safety of our society. Some big picture things there. Do you agree with any of that?
Yeah, I disagree. And in fact, the statistics coming from those states that have legalized marijuana are showing just the opposite. I don't know if the show has aired yet, but there is a network television program that has basically some youth outside a place where recreational marijuana is sold, kind of like back in the day where they would see if they could get people to buy alcohol or cigarettes for kids. And in this case, it's just one television doing this particular report, but they actually were unable to find people to buy marijuana for youth that were standing outside the store. So the reduced minor use is something that is definitely a statistic that's coming out that's proving factual. It is definitely something to be concerned about, but we're actually seeing just the opposite of what Calm is stating, that minors are using less.
We're going to go to our callers now. We've got Tom on the line with us in Columbus. Hi, Tom.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the program. I would strongly support full legalization and regulation in line with the regulations on alcohol. I can't fathom. First of all, I'm an occasional smoker, kind of an occasional drinker. So personally, I'm just looking at it from the fact of the societal cost and the incarceration due to the laws against marijuana. And I don't know how we can, you know, legitimately live in a place where alcohol is as abundant as it is, with the problems that it causes. Domestic abuse alone and nicotine, we know what the carcinogens are in there, and yet marijuana is somehow taboo.
Tom, thank you so much for those comments. Tom supports marijuana with regulation and thinks maybe it sounds like he's getting it that he thinks it has is in essence less harmful than some other legal substances like alcohol, for instance. So what do you say to that, Jay?
Yeah, I would agree with him 100%. I know comparing it to alcohol maybe isn't necessarily correct at terms. There are lethal dosage limits that alcohol can kill you and marijuana cannot. So there are obviously medical marijuana states. There's therapeutic benefits. But as far as prohibition versus a regulated model, the regulated model is going to win out every day by removing the black market. You're going to have IDs that are checked, limits on the amounts. The degrees of regulation might vary from state to state. We might have home grows versus no home grows, but definitely the prohibition doesn't stop people from smoking marijuana.
Jay Seltofner is with us right now. He's from Northern Wisconsin Normal, talking about Marquette Law School poll results on marijuana. The latest results showing that a majority of Wisconsinites do want marijuana to be legalized and to be regulated like alcohol.
We want to hear from you now at 800-642-1234. Why do you think the number of people who support marijuana legalization went up in this last survey? What do you think about legalized marijuana? Should it be legalized in Wisconsin? Do you expect the legislature to do something like that? Medical? Recreational? None at all? What regulations would you want to see? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up our conversation after a short break. Stay with us here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. And we're continuing our conversation now with Jay Seltofner about poll results showing a majority of Wisconsinites want to see marijuana legalized and regulated like alcohol.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you want that? Do you want marijuana legalized fully in Wisconsin? How about medical marijuana? How would it be regulated, in your view, if it were legalized? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Jay, you referenced some of the possible ramifications of legalized marijuana on the criminal justice system. And I wonder if you could flesh that out for us a little bit. What kinds of change might you expect to see?
This is, you know, my personal opinion is that you're going to have I don't want to say necessarily renewed, but with the police violence and everything that's going on, it's going to take one less thing for the police to spend time on that the majority of the public agrees shouldn't be a crime and is going to allow them to focus on more serious things. So that's going to just create betterment in the community if crime goes down. Then also you're going to have things that are associated with that. You know, people who are prosecuted both on the side for defense have to pay money for attorneys. On the offensive side, as far as the state goes, they will have attorneys also. Prosecuting attorneys, ADAs, we have jails, the probation alone, urine testing alone, that if we had some sort of legalization market, those things would be disappearing and would be basically line item expenditures that can be taken out of the budget.
Now, this might be further down the road than we are at the moment, but what would the plan be for people who are already incarcerated for marijuana offenses?
Again, depends on the severity. If it was just personal possession from cultivation, again, some legislation is expunging those records. Again, that would be up to the legislation to decide. Normally, nonviolent offenders shouldn't be in prison anyways, and that's the way we would look at it. You might have some people who have mandatory sentences because of multiple offenses and those types of things. So, but nonviolent offenders, especially for marijuana-only crimes, should be reviewed.
We'll go back to our phone lines now. We've got Brad on the line in Greene County. Brad, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I would just wanted to chime in about the legalization effort. I do believe that our medical marijuana laws in the state do need to be revised. As a Parkinson's patient, I would refer to United States Patent 6630507 as a neuroprotectant, and I don't believe that the current legislation as it stands with the CBD laws for seizure patients and epilepsy in children, not one of those patients has gotten any of that to this date. So I do believe there needs to be an effort to move forward on that front as well.
Brad, do you want to start with that and move to different areas like recreational, or do you think is that far enough for you to look at legalization of medical marijuana? Brad, you still there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be a good start. I mean, what people do recreationally is one thing, but when you're suffering as a patient, I believe that should be first and foremost.
Brad, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate that. And Jay, do you have any list of priorities there? Are you looking for medical marijuana legalization first, or do you think that you'd be happy if Wisconsin embraced that alongside recreational use?
You know, I would be happy for any positive reform under the ideal situation. Even a decriminalization measure statewide would reduce expenditures. Matter of fact, during the last budget, actually the last couple budgets, the public defender's office had basically said, hey, if you decriminalize, it's going to cost us less on prosecuting those things, so that's a direct savings to taxpayers. So even a decriminalization measure is positive reform, but personally I'd like to see a comprehensive bill that would not only correct or enhance the CBD program that Brad mentioned, but would also create an industrial hemp program along with medical marijuana. And then because there is such a tremendous tax revenue to be generated from the recreational market, I think that needs to be included in there. And because it is an all-encompassing type platform, even though the three or four are separate, we're all talking about a plant item and cultivating it and processing it and having point of sales. So in order to make a robust system work, we need to address all aspects of this plant.
Let's look at an email here from Bruce, who wants to know, how does it benefit society to legalize recreational marijuana? What's the case?
Tax revenue, first and foremost. We're seeing a tremendous amount of tax revenue from just the sale of recreational marijuana. They have topped the billions of dollars of sales. It is a job creator, that it is industry. We mentioned the less lesser strain on law enforcement. And then if we look at the correlation between drug policy reform and some of our major social issues, we already touched on the minor use and the opiate dependence, but for example, housing, people may get kicked out of their housing because they're using an illicit federal substance. They may lose their student loans because of these things. So removing cannabis, the most widely used illicit substance in America, removing that has many parallels to other aspects of society.
We're talking with Jay Selthoffner right now, treasurer and co-founder of Northern Wisconsin Normal, the national organization for the reform of marijuana laws, taking stock of a new Marquette Law School poll that showed a majority of Wisconsinites wanted a fully legalized and regulated marijuana in the state. And Jay, looking at the past year, you know, we saw the Supreme Court legalize same-sex marriage, and part of the reason for that decision, according to analysts, is that they saw a shift in society itself and that the court reflected that shift. And I wonder if you think you see that, and specifically, do you see it in Wisconsin?
We see the trend shifting, you know, nationwide. Obviously, we have a majority of the states having some sort of medical market, 24 or 25 of them having applicable laws which have medicine in the hands of patients, another dozen or so with the CBD laws. But yeah, no, the tide is changing. I wouldn't necessarily say it's shifted dramatically. I think there's always been general support for it. But when you're talking about an illegal substance, you might get some people who are not necessarily willing to support it right off the bat. But when you talk about the wording of it or when you look at the logistics of it, what are we trying to accomplish by legalizing it or regulating it, which I prefer to use the term regulated versus legalization, because legalization makes it sound like it was bad in the first place. But regulating the market takes away a lot of the fears and a lot of the concerns and addresses the concerns that the opposition keeps talking about.
Let's take another caller now. We've got Sally with us from La Crosse. Hi, Sally.
Hi. Well, I really think there's a lot more benefits to marijuana than there is to alcohol. My concern is our legislative body and our government in Wisconsin, because, you know, I've watched over the recent past, you know, and we've had people getting 13, 14, 15 drunken driving tickets. And, I mean, Wisconsin has got such a big, huge lobby for alcohol that it never goes anywhere. And, I mean, I agree with the benefits of marijuana, and I think it's very beneficial to lots of people, whether it be medical or recreational.
Sally, thanks a lot for those comments. And Sally pointing to drunk driving law in Wisconsin, which she says, it sounds like she's saying it doesn't go far enough, that people are getting away with perhaps, as she sees, more than they should. How do we ensure that if we make this shift in Wisconsin, that marijuana gets regulated effectively?
I think that's the first key, is you have to regulate it effectively, and prohibition is no form of regulation whatsoever. Whether it's a nanogram limit to improve impairment, those things are still in debate. That's what's important about the litmus test that these other states are going through. It is time, though, for Wisconsin to not only pull the data from these other states, but take the best of the best that these states have designed their laws in, pick and choose, and instead of just doing something, be a premier leader legislatively on the issue.
Now, there was an effort in the past year to get marijuana oil, you'll have the name at your fingertips, legalized.
CBD oil.
And that failed. Yep. What do you ascribe that to, that failure?
Well, it actually didn't fail. There is a law on the books, so we have a CBD law. What they were trying to do is either amend that existing law or create additional amendments to the law, which would loosen the restrictions, which in turn would allow patients more access.
Are you happy with where that is?
No, not at all. I mean, patients have no access. There's no market. There, you know, so why did it stall or not stall? That's hard to say. The initial bill passed with both full support in the House and Senate. You know, Republicans and Democrats both voted yes for a form of medical marijuana bill. I think there is some confusion about what CBD oil is, whether it's non-psychoactive. I know one of the things at the state level which probably needs to be fixed is just the testing process alone, because it's my understanding that the state tests, when you test a product, it's either going to test positive or negative for THC. And the CBD products contain such a little amount, or in order to be a CBD product, it needs to contain such a little amount of THC, but those are not passing the field tests. And so it was kind of premature in my eyes to have a CBD oil thing. It might have made more sense to have a comprehensive medical marijuana market that allowed pediatric use. If that was the concern of treating children with seizures, well, then a medical marijuana bill with pediatric provisions makes more sense.
Jay, thank you so much for joining us. That was Jay Selhoffner, treasurer and co-founder of Northern Wisconsin Normal. That's the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana. And we were talking there about the latest Marquette Law School poll results showing a majority of Wisconsinites want fully legalized and regulated marijuana.
Last winter, the Netflix documentary series Making a Murderer got a lot of people obsessed with a Wisconsin murder convention and a conviction, I'm sorry, and the web streaming company says there's more to the story.
Netflix announced that the filmmakers behind Making a Murderer are working on a new installment of that series. The original 10 episodes looked at the murder conviction of Stephen Avery of Manitowoc County and raised some questions about that trial. People have signed petitions calling for Avery's release. Critics of the documentary say, though, it doesn't tell the whole story.
The filmmakers say there are unanswered questions they want to pursue. And this news, by the way, this announcement of new episodes comes less than a week after Making a Murderer got 6 Emmy nominations. This thing just keeps going.
So no news yet about when this might come out. But as you said, it does just keep going. And I think we can all remember in sort of late January, something, it just blew up.
Yeah.
And everywhere you went, everyone was talking about this. So some more grist for the mill coming up.
Definitely a lot of attention on Wisconsin, not necessarily in a way people in Wisconsin want to have attention for the rest of the country. Well, if you watched Making a Murderer, what did you think of it? Do you want to see more episodes?
And what questions would you like answered in the next series coming up?
Yeah, tweet us at Central Time WPR. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.